Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Good Friday morning, John Hancock.
Top of the morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. And boy, we've got a celebrity guest on the line.
Yes,
do we
indeed
not?
We do. Our favorite, Colonel Jeff McCausland, retired colonel from the U.S. Army. And he is also a CBS News military analyst. Colonel McCausland, welcome aboard. President Trump gave an address on Wednesday night. I don't feel like we learned much.
I would have to agree to you guys. Happy Easter, by the way, that we learned much at all. It seemed to be, I would almost say, a summary of Mr. Trump's social media greatest hits with respect to the war in Iran. I mean, the president did talk about, to some degree, which is, I think, the basic idea was to try to explain to the American people how we got where we got. And so he talked about some of the historical aspects of that. I thought it was very curious that he talked about how long wars are. He talked about the length of World War II, Korea, Vietnam, et cetera. Sort of suggesting that the American people should have a bit of patience. But if you want me to have patience, it would seem that the president would have given this speech before the war began, explained to the public why it was necessary, not unlike George W. Bush did, quite frankly, in his State of the Union address back in 2003, whereas Mr. Trump spent a grand total of 3 minutes during his State of the Union talking about Iran. And then he went from there to what his objectives were, which seems to be the goalposts kind of are moving, guys. He talked about blunting their missile capacity. Well, a report came out yesterday from the intel services that about half of their capacity is still retained. He suddenly said, well, I'm not really worried about this nuclear material anymore because we can monitor it from space. And if they start to resurrect it, we'll go get them again. Well, we could have done that before the war began. I thought that was the biggest reason why we went to war. And then he said, well, and I was never interested in regime change. But I happen to recall him talking about that at the very beginning, that the people should rise up. I happen to recall him talking about demanding unconditional surrender, which is kind of regime change. I kind of remember him talking about he should be individually involved in selecting the next leader of Iran, which sounds like regime change, but suddenly now we're not. So I'm not really sure that he was successful in convincing the people that this was, you know, the proper thing to do. And in the midst of all that, of course, the Iranians were firing missiles at Israel and at our allies in the region. And in the aftermath, the stock market went down and the price of oil went up.
Yeah, I saw a video clip yesterday of Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was the former national security advisor for Bill Clinton, I believe.
Clinton and Carter.
And he was made the point, and this was, I don't know, decades ago, about the risks of going to war against Iran. And he outlined the bombing of our allies in the Middle East. He outlined the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. I mean, all of this stuff was known. Surely it had to have been known by the military folks at the Pentagon, right?
All I can tell you guys, I've only been doing this military stuff for about 50 years now, okay? And for a good portion of that time, I was the dean of the United States Army War College. And every year we ran war games as part of the training and education of the students. In almost every case, the scenario had something to do with the Middle East. And in every case, if you start doing a scenario in the Middle East, the first thing you worry about is the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. Because 20% of the world's oil supply passes through that particular passage, and that's the way it's been for years. So I know for a fact that we looked at that problem over and over and over and over, and I'm confident the people down at War Plans in the Army staff and on the Joint Staff had done that repeatedly as well. So it shouldn't have been a surprise to anyone, but somehow it was a surprise to the president and his cabinet.
Secretary of Defense Hegseth continues to remove generals from positions, most recently the head of the United States Army. What kind of message is that sending to our enemies and potential enemies around the world?
That we're in disarray, I think, to a degree. In the middle of a major conflict, to fire the chief of staff of the United States Army as you're deploying more and more Army troops to an area of conflict certainly is not reassuring. No particular reason was given. I mean, Mr. General George, Randy George, is not in ill health or anything like that. He was not accused of anything. It basically looks like a power play because the Secretary of Defense has now fired the Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff, who happened to be an African-American, fired the CNO, fired the Commandant of the Coast Guard, both happened to be women, fired the Vice Chief of Staff of the Air Force, now has fired the Chief of Staff of the Army. I guess if I was Commandant of the Marine Corps, I'd be looking over my shoulder. But most people thought that this was handwriting on the wall because he had previously fired the Vice Chief of Staff of the Army, a guy named Jim Mingus, and promoted a guy by the name of Chris Leneve, who had been commander of the 82nd Airborne Division, to be the new Vice Chief of Staff of the Army. Well, prior to that, Leneve's job had been military assistant to Hegseth, was very close to Hegseth. So as soon as he got to be Vice Chief of Staff back in January, most people thought General George's time as the Chief of Staff were numbered.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
Well, I know we've just got about a minute left with you, and you mentioned the 82nd Airborne, and they've been shipped into the Middle East. We've got all of these troops that have been sent there. What do you make of it?
Well, what I make of it is, of course, the war's not going as it was intended. It's supposed to last only a few days, and we thought that the regime would collapse. I mean, I think that the president was emboldened by what happened in Venezuela and thought that that was a template he could apply in Iran. Now he's found that's not the case. As air power has been applied to great destruction, it's still in all. The Iranians reacted much more broadly than we expected as well. And now there's an effort to try to find some way to get out of this, so at least preserve the option to use ground troops, either because that threat will leverage them to come to the negotiating table or the necessity of doing something on the ground. You got three big possible targets, all of which are very complex and frankly would incur significant casualties, I'm fear. One would be, of course, to go into the center of Iran physically and secure this about 960 pounds of enriched material we know they have, which would be the center point of them trying to develop a nuclear weapon. Unbelievably complex special operations mission would make the operation into Venezuela look really easy. The second operation would be seize Karg Island, which is the main export point for Iranian crude oil and natural gas, but it's way up in the northern part of the Gulf, very close to Iran. Physically getting there would be very, very difficult because you'd need to bring a force into the Persian Gulf. Well, you got to deal with the straits to do that. And then once you get there, even if you can secure the island, you got to stay there, and you're within artillery, short-range missile, and drone fire of the Iranian mainland. Oh, by the way, quick historical footnote. Curiously enough, Karg Island is about the same size as Iwo Jima, so keep that in the back of your mind. And the third military operation with ground forces would be to secure a portion of the straits, the land area on the Iranian side of the straits, to facilitate that operation. But again, mountainous terrain, you'd have to go in fairly deep to push their missiles back so they couldn't still threaten the Gulf, would be a very, very significant and difficult military operation.
Colonel Jeff McCausland has been our guest. Thank you so much, Colonel, and happy Easter to you and your family. Hancock and Kelly rolls on after this.
Let's go to the Overhead Door Company.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.